degree and that he was sentenced to life imprisonment. But his attorney filed an appeal based on the wrongful admission of the oral confession. I rewound the tape, knowing the rest of it. A higher court threw out the verdict, and Adam was released to live with one or both of his parents. There was plenty of evidence to place Adam at the scene of the murder, but an eyewitness was lacking, so he got away with his crime. How did this all fit in with Rosa? I had the uncomfortable feeling that something I had read held a clue to the answer, but it eluded me and I couldn't capture it. A voice spoke next to me, startling me so that I jumped. "Did you find what you were looking for?" I stared up at the librarian who had brought me the film. "I don't know," I answered. "I thought there would be something about..." A wisp of a thought tickled my mind, then disappeared before I could grasp it. What was it? "Do me a favor, peel some carrots," Mom called as she trotted past me on her way to the garage. "I forgot about lettuce and tomatoes for a salad, so I'm going to make a quick trip to the store." I peeled the carrots, then wandered from the kitchen into the den, Dinky at my heels. The house was quiet, the sun slanting long, shimmering ribbons of light through the west windows. I walked to the edge of the entry hall, which was peaceful in the late afternoon stillness and shadow. I found myself waiting, melting into the silence as though it were expected of me. Why? Slowly, like cold, creeping fingers against my skin, came the awareness that some unseen being was with me. Terrified, I whispered, "Rosa, is it you?" "Esto para usted." From classroom Spanish, I remembered the words, "This is for you," but I didn't know what Rosa meant. Slowly, I sank to the tiles and sat cross-legged. "What is for me, Rosa? What do you want of me?" I asked. My whisper was so loud that I shrank from the sound, trembling. Dinky crooned in the back of her throat, and her hair stood on end. With a shriek, she bolted from the room. In spite of my fear, I squeezed my eyes tightly shut, took a deep breath, and tried to concentrate. "Rosa," I begged, "don't force me. I told you that I'd help you willingly." There was no response, so I added, "I'm trying to reach you, but I don't know what step to take next. You'll have to tell me. You wanted me here. I'm here. I'm listening. I'm waiting." "Silencio, por favor." Her words were soft and tearful, almost like an apology, and somehow I understood that Rosa had something she wanted to show me. Slowly, I began to feel the room changing around me. The air shifted, turned warmly damp and sour with fear, and Rosa's sobs became little drops of ice that slithered down my backbone. I was afraid to open my eyes, terrified of what I might see. Suddenly, with the swiftness and shock of a slap, the sensation vanished. "Rosa?" I thought in surprise. "What happened? Are you here with me? Do you want to talk to me?" I could feel her breath against my face, but it was agitated. Her plan had been interrupted. I slumped with relief, as though I'd been held tightly by a string and suddenly let go. Even though she hadn't told me, I suspected that Rosa had been about to unleash the horror that clung to this room. "Rosa, I'm afraid. I'm scared to death," I told her. "I promised to help you, and I will, but please don't pull me into something I can't handle." I waited for an answer, but it didn't come. Instead, I realized that I was being watched by someone close by. Someone I knew was not Rosa. I couldn't stand the tension. My eyelids flew open and my head jerked toward the window next to the front door. I screamed as my eyes met those in the face that was staring in at me. The figure waved and gestured. Through a haze, I saw that it was only Dee Dee. Stumbling, shaking, I managed to get to my feet and cross the hall to open the front door. "I didn't mean to scare you," Dee Dee said. She shifted the large potted plant in her arms and put it on the hall table. "You look awful. You're so pale. I'm sorry." She clutched my shoulders and led me to the stairs, pushing me down. "Do you need to put your head between your knees?" "I'm all right. I'm not going to faint." I took a couple of long, deep breaths and felt the color flood back into my cheeks. "What in the world were you doing on the floor with your eyes shut?" Dee Dee asked. "Yoga? Oh, I know. You were meditating." "Strange, Sarah. Not again. Oh, please, not again." Embarrassed, I snapped, "It doesn't matter, does it? I didn't think I was on exhibit." "Hey, look," Dee Dee explained. "Don't blame me for seeing you. Anybody who comes to the door can see inside your house. It would be hard not to." She smiled. "And don't be embarrassed because I caught you meditating. Lots of people do it. I got into a weight loss program last year that called for meditating, and I tried it, but I couldn't keep my mind on it because I kept thinking about other things." She giggled. "If I were you, though, I'd do the meditating in your bedroom, where you'd have some privacy, and not in the entry hall." She sat on the stair beside me. "Would you like to split a Coke?" I asked, desperate to change the subject. "No, thanks," Dee Dee said. "It's almost dinner time. I just came over to deliver the plant from my mom to yours and to tell you something about those papers and things you found. I asked Lupita if she knew anybody over here named Rosa Louise, and she..." "Dee Dee," I interrupted. "I asked you not to tell anyone about those things." She looked slightly guilty. "I didn't, really. I just asked her if she knew Rosa Louise. I'm not going to talk about it to anyone else, honest." "Okay, so what did Lupita tell you?" "That's the strange part," Dee Dee said. "She acted real scared and kept rattling on in Spanish so fast I couldn't understand her. I did understand a couple of words, though. Immigration and deported." "Rosa? That must be what she meant. If Rosa had been deported, surely the officials would have let her take her belongings with her." "She must have taken her clothes," Dee Dee said. "Maybe she forgot about the packet you found until after she was on a bus headed back to Mexico, and it was too late." "Her money and the silver medal her uncle left her, do you really think she'd forget those?"
"I don't know."
Dee Dee leaned over and scratched at a tiny red spot on her ankle. "We're not going to find out anything from Lupita. That's what I wanted to tell you." "You're wrong. We did find out something." Dee Dee stopped scratching and straightened, looking at me with surprise.
"What are you talking about?"
"It's simple," I said. "We found out that Lupita knew Rosa." Chapter 8. By the time dinner was over, I was exhausted. I watched TV in the den and woke up during the 10 o'clock news to find I'd been sleeping all evening.
"It's a good sign," I heard Dad saying. "Sarah's beginning to relax. We all need to. The murder is over and done with, and we can't let it affect our lives."
"It affects the way I feel about the people on this block," Mom said. "I can't help it."
She glared at Evelyn Pritchard's potted plant, which I'd moved to the coffee table.
"I know." There was a pause, and Dad said, "We could take Sarah's example, too. She's already made friends in the neighborhood."
I stretched, yawned loudly, and sat up, pretending to have just awakened, so they wouldn't know that I'd overheard what they'd said.
"It looks like I woke up just in time to go to bed," I told them.
"I'm afraid that after your long nap, you won't be able to get to sleep," Mom said. "Would you like me to make you some hot cocoa? I'll be glad to stay up and chat with you."
"Thanks, but I don't need hot cocoa or conversation either. I feel as though I could sleep for a couple of weeks."
"Maybe you need vitamins," Mom began.
But Dad and I shouted at her at the same time. Dorothy! Mom!
She laughed. Okay, I'll back off.
I kissed Mom and Dad goodnight and climbed the stairs to my room. Once inside with the door shut, I opened the bottom drawer in my chest of drawers and took out the packet of things that belonged to Rosa. Separating them, I laid them out on top of the chest to examine them. The silver metal seemed to tug in my hand, so I opened my palm, exposing the metal to view. Rosa? I asked, but there was no answer. The silver grew warm, probably from the heat of my body. I placed the medal beside the little calendar and reread the letter. What had Rosa planned to show me this afternoon? I shuddered, pushing the question out of my mind. I didn't want to think about it. I was afraid that I knew. I began to yawn again. My eyelids were heavy. I wrapped up the little bundle and tucked it back into the drawer. I showered, put on my pajamas, and literally fell into bed. I dreamed about a young woman, not much older than I. She sat near the foot of my bed, huddled inside a large woven shawl. Her skin was a deep brown, her black hair pulled back tightly, and her dark eyes never left my face. The sorrow that drew her features into a tight mask was so intense that in sympathy I reached out to her. She straightened and extended her hands to me. But as she sat upright, the shawl fell back, and I saw that her body was soaked with blood. The dark blood dripped from her fingers onto mine, and I was helpless to pull away. No, I tried to cry out. Ayúdame, she pleaded. Terrified, I tried to shout at her to go away, to run from those eyes that stared into mine. But I couldn't move or speak. Finally, desperately, a guttural animal sound escaped through my lips, waking me. I was tangled in the sheet, my body drenched with sweat. Struggling, kicking away the sheet, I managed to sit up and turn on the bed lamp to chase away the last remnants of the nightmare. There were no other sounds in the house, so it was obvious I didn't make enough noise to wake Mom and Dad. I slumped against the headboard, unable to get the picture of the woman out of my mind. Rosa. It had to be. I'd promised to help her and had opened my mind to her. I'd allowed her to come. Not in my dreams, I murmured aloud. There has to be some place where I can escape. Rosa, I don't want you to frighten me like this. Do you understand? There was a special silence, like a door closing softly, and I knew she had left. I didn't understand the dream. Why had Rosa been covered with blood? What did she have to do with Darlene Garland's murder? What had really happened in this house? I squirmed back down under the sheet, punched at my pillow, and rolled on my side. I ached for sleep, but I was afraid to let go, afraid that Rosa might return. The next day, after breakfast, Mom decided to hang pictures, and I helped her, the measuring and hammering and pounding mercifully driving all thoughts of the dream out of my head. Around 11, she asked, "Where's Dee Dee? I thought she'd be over to see you." She said something about having to go shopping all day with her mother. This is Dee Dee's day off from her lifeguard job. "Speaking of shopping," Mom said, "I've been making a list. Hardware, plumbing supplies, that sort of thing. It's going to take me all afternoon to find everything on my list. Want to come? Or would you rather stay home?" I smiled at her. "Going to a plumbing supply store is not my idea of real excitement. I could stay here and work and be of more help. Would you like me to unpack the books and put them in the bookcases? I know how you like them arranged." "I'd love it if you take care of the books," Mom said. "I've been dreading that job." The mail came, but no letter from Marcy. Why should I have expected one? I hadn't written to her either. "I'll write today," I promised myself. "I'll tell her about Dee Dee, maybe about Tony." but I knew I wouldn't. I was distancing myself, afraid to write a letter that might not be answered. Mom left after lunch, and Dinky settled into a nap on the top box of those marked books. I moved Dinky to another perch. Upset at being moved, she narrowed her eyes and mewed a complaint, then pretended to go back to sleep. I was so busy checking titles and reading snatches here and there that I jumped when the doorbell rang. Dinky rose majestically, flipping her tail with a snap of irritation. Through the window by the door, I saw Tony and stopped, catching my breath as his eyes met mine. I smiled, not trying to hide my delight, and hurried to open the door.
"I was in the neighborhood and thought this would be a good time to meet your mother," Tony said as he stepped inside and shut the door.
The air turned cold and the walls of the entry hall seemed to press inward. My head pounded and I silently screamed at Rosa, "No, not now! Go away! You can't do this to me now!" Gasping for breath, I grabbed Tony's hand and tugged him past the entry hall, through the dining room, and into the kitchen. I let go and leaned against the nearest counter, breathing heavily. Whatever I had felt in the entry hall had gone. But Tony was studying me, and it surprised me that his eyes had narrowed in the same way that Dinky narrowed hers, with light seeming to gleam from under the lashes.
"What's the matter, Sarah?" he asked me.
"Nothing. I'm fine." I tried to shrug off what had happened. "I've been working hard unpacking books. I guess I got a little out of breath."
I opened the refrigerator door, wanting desperately to talk about something else.
"How about a soft drink?"
"Sure," he said, "but I can only stay for a few minutes." He looked at his watch and glanced back through the living room. "Where's your mother?"
"Oh, Mom, she left to run errands. She won't be back for a few hours."
Tony smiled. Did I imagine that he looked relieved?
"My bad timing," he said.
"Well, as long as I'm here, I'll help you unpack the books."
"Thanks, but you said you could only stay a few minutes. You won't have time."
His smile was easy. "I'll make time."
We took our soft drinks into the den, and Tony worked beside me, making the job go much faster. Our conversation consisted of his asking, "Where do these go?" and my telling him, "On the bottom shelf over there, or right here next to the gardening books," until he suddenly stopped, took the books I was holding out of my hands, and led me to the sofa.
"We need a break," he said. "I want a chance to talk to you."
He didn't let go of my hand, and I was glad. I didn't want him to.
"Tell me about yourself," Tony said.
"There's not much to tell. We used to live in Missouri until Dad was transferred here to Houston."
"That's not about you," he insisted, and leaned closer, staring into my eyes as though he could see what was in my mind. "I want to know about Sarah. The things that make her happy, the things she likes, even the things that frighten her." His voice was low, almost a whisper.
His question puzzled me. "Why should you want to know what frightens me?"
"Something frightens you," he said. He stroked my hand. "Look, you're trembling."
Maybe it was Tony who frightened me, or the way he made me feel. I wasn't sure.
"If it's the house," he said, "maybe I can help you."
He leaned back, breaking the spell, and I took a long, shuddering breath. "How could you help me?"
"You're forgetting. I know Adam. I know the story about the murder."
"Did Adam tell you why he did it?" Tony threw me a quick sideways glance.
"There wasn't much doubt. He was on medication for a couple of things, an antibiotic he was taking because of a viral infection, and a steroid he was taking to build himself up for the football team. He'd been having trouble with depression, too, and a doctor had given him something for that."
Adam said he was so over-medicated he didn't know what he was doing.
But murder? I asked. How could anyone not know he was killing someone?
Tony bristled. I'm on Adam's side, he said. I don't want him to go to prison.
There's not much chance of that, is there?
I knew I sounded bitter because Tony gave me another sharp look. He was quiet for a few minutes, then said, I guess it's you I'm thinking of, Sarah, and not Adam. I don't like to think of you being frightened in this house. You're a very special person, and I want you to be happy, not afraid.
I'll be all right.
Tony moved closer and put an arm around my shoulders. You were frightened of something when I got here. I could see it in your face. What was it?
It was just, well, a sensation I had. It went away.
Tony's hand on my arm was warm and firm. If you want to talk about it, Sarah, I'll listen. I would have loved to have been able to tell him everything that had happened to me, but of course I couldn't. Yet maybe there was something Tony could help me with. I asked him.
You came here to see Adam sometimes, isn't that right?
Yes.
Did you ever meet any of the Holt's household help?
For just a second, his fingers tightened on my arm, but he answered easily, Sure. There were a couple of them over the years, maybe three.
One named Rosa Louise?
Rosa Louise? His voice was strained.
I don't know. I'm not sure. The name isn't familiar.
She was young and slender, with a small, narrow face and large eyes. He sat upright, turned, and peered into my face.
How do you know what she looked like?
Stunned, I fumbled for an answer. I found some things that belonged to her. She'd hidden them away under a loose baseboard in the closet in the maid's room off the kitchen.
What were these things?
Money, both pesos and United States currency, a letter telling her that her uncle had died, which was addressed to her at a Mexican address, a silver religious medal, and a calendar.
A calendar? What kind of a calendar?
Just a small calendar, 2 years old. She'd marked off the days up to March 3rd. He paused for a minute, breathing heavily.
What's the matter? I asked him.
Nothing's the matter, Tony said. I'm just trying to remember, as you asked me to. Suddenly, he added, You didn't mention the photograph.
There wasn't a photograph.
Then how do you know what she looked like?
I took a deep breath and the words tumbled out. I saw the woman, Rosa, in a dream. I hated myself for telling. I'd done it again. I waited for the wary, embarrassed look to come into Tony's eyes. But it didn't. Tony looked at me seriously.
A dream, he murmured. I seem to remember there was a young woman. I think her name could have been Rosa.
When did she live here?
He scowled, as though he were thinking hard. How should I know?
I mean, was it a long time ago? A few years ago? Why had I asked that? Was I testing him?
Tony leaned back against the sofa cushions, and his eyes narrowed again as he studied me. The calendar you found should tell you that, shouldn't it?
Embarrassed, I blushed. There was no way to explain.
Time for me to be going, Tony said abruptly, and stood. He reached down for my hand and pulled me to my feet.
Please don't be mad at me, I said. I wasn't trying to trick you.
Hey, it's okay, Tony said. I told you I couldn't stay long. I'm going to be late as it is.
I looked at the clock in the VCR on top of the television set. Mom should be home soon, I said. I wish you could stay just a little while longer and meet her.
Sorry. Tony stopped me as I turned to go toward the front door and placed his hands on my shoulders.
Sarah, he said, I don't like to worry you, but I hope you've got Rose's things well hidden.
Hidden? Why?
Are they?
No, not exactly. They're in the chest of drawers in my room, but no one goes in there but me.
He looked so serious that it scared me.
Why are you telling me this?
Because no one should know about them. You haven't told anyone besides me, have you?
I telephoned Mr. Holt to ask him about Rosa and told him I'd found, well, some of her things. And Dee Dee knows. She was here when I found them. She translated the letter for me.
Tony sucked in his breath and muttered something.
I'm sorry Dee Dee knows. The fewer people, the better.
Why?
Why? Oh, because Dee Dee spills everything she knows.
I asked her not to.
He shook his head. There's no way of telling what those things of Rose's mean. Probably nothing, but we ought to keep quiet about them.
I don't understand.
She would have headed back to Mexico, he said. There'd be no way to find her, and in trying, you might stir up a lot of unnecessary trouble.
For whom?
For Adam and his family, he said. Probably for Rosa, too, since she was here illegally.
He took a deep breath, and his eyes were so dark and demanding that I shivered. He added in a voice so soft I had to strain to hear.
And maybe for you.
My voice cracked as I tried to talk.
Tony, are you threatening me? Oh, Sarah, he said, as though I'd heard him. Don't think that. It wasn't a threat. What I said was only a warning.
Chapter 9. Mom was disappointed that she had missed meeting Tony.
I wish he'd called in advance, she said.
He didn't plan on coming. He just happened to be in the neighborhood, I told her. A little wrinkle flickered between Mom's eyebrows.
Sarah, before you go out with Tony again, your father and I want to meet him.
Sure, I answered quickly. That's taken for granted.
Just make sure Tony knows the rule.
I will. You're gonna like Tony, Mom, I promise. Smiling, I rummaged through the nearest brown paper bag and said, Nothing interesting in here. When I was a little kid, you used to bring me a lollipop.
Try the bag near the stove, she said with a grin.
No lollipops in it, but I think you'll settle for some red grapes. They look sweet enough to burst.
I washed the grapes, put them in a bowl, and Mom joined me, munching on a handful of grapes as she leaned against the counter.
I stopped off at the Civic Club office, she said. I signed up for a family membership at the swimming pool.
When I didn't answer, she added, Whenever you're ready to go swimming again, Sarah, the pool will be there. But I wasn't ready. Not yet.
Dee Dee came over the next morning.
I saw your names on the club roster, she said to Mom and me. Have you been swimming in the pool yet?
We haven't had a chance, Mom told her.
There's no time like the present, Dee Dee said. I'm subbing for another guard, so I've got to be at the pool in a few minutes. Why don't you come with me? It's a hot, beautiful day, and the water is going to feel wonderful.
I'd love to, Mom said. She pushed a damp strand of hair back from her forehead and laughed.
It wasn't hard to talk me into it, was it?
They turned toward me. I'll work on putting the books away. There aren't many left, I told them.
No, Dee Dee said firmly. Come with us. If you don't want to swim, no one's going to make you. But you can watch us having fun and work on your tan. If you don't have sunscreen, I'll lend you mine.
Mom didn't say a word. She just waited. But I could see the hope in her eyes.
I'll come and watch, I answered, although I wished I could do anything else but. I'd bring a book. I'd read. I wouldn't have to look at the pool if I didn't want to.
Try,
Mom whispered when we arrived at the pool. To please her, I looked at the water and the people splashing and enjoying it, and did my best to tell myself I could enjoy it too. But I began to gasp with each breath, pressing my hands against the pain in my chest, remembering how my lungs had ached for air. I stumbled back to the safety and shade of a large oak tree, dropped to the grass with a shudder, and deliberately turned my back on the pool. Mom swam laps for a while down at the deep end, then walked to where I was lying on my stomach and dripped onto my arms and book as she wrapped her hair in a towel. As she sat beside me, I scrambled to my feet and asked, "Ready to go home?" "I'd like to sun for a while, then have another swim," she answered. "Would you mind?" "Mom, I came. I tried. Now I want to go home." "I'll go with you." "You don't need to. In fact, I wish you wouldn't. Stay and enjoy your swim. I can walk home in a few minutes." "It's awfully hot, Sarah. Take the car," she said. "No, you drive it back. Really, I'd rather walk." I kissed her on top of her head, turned to wave to Dee Dee, and strode out of the pool area to the street. It took only a few minutes to walk home. As I unlocked and opened the front door, Dinky streaked past me, not even bothering to curl between my legs as she usually did. "Dinky," I called, but she sat in the middle of the front flower bed, her back to me as if I didn't exist. Only the rhythmic twitching of the tip of her tail showed me that she was upset. "Goofy cat," I told her. "What are you mad about now?" I shut the front door against the heat and hurried to the kitchen for water. Houston in August was not the place to go walking. A tiny sound alerted me, and I tried to place it. What was it? A footstep? A board moving overhead? Or was it the click of a door closing? I waited, not breathing, listening intently, and began to sense that someone else was in the house. My first thought was Rosa, but it wasn't Rosa's presence I felt. Whoever was in this house was a living person, not a spirit, and he was just as aware of me as I was of him. I heard another light movement, almost too small to identify, but it was over my head. Someone was upstairs. Frantically, I tried to think of what to do. What if I bolted through the kitchen door to the backyard and circled the house and ran for help? But anger overrode my fear. Why should I let someone prowl through our house, helping himself to whatever he wanted? While I was going for help, he could get away. It wasn't fair. As quietly as I could, I tiptoed to the kitchen telephone and dialed 911. In a low voice, I gave the information to the police dispatcher. Okay, now I could leave the house. I hung up and edged toward the back door, but the doorknob moved uselessly in my hand. The deadbolt was locked, and the key, which we left in the door, was gone. I heard a sound that seemed to come from the head of the stairs. He was coming closer. I'd be trapped in the kitchen, and it would take too long to try to unlock a window and tug it open. If the intruder was on the stairs, he could intercept me before I reached the front door. Maybe I could get to my parents' bathroom, lock myself inside, and climb out the window. The phone rang. It would be the police dispatcher calling back, but there was no time to answer. I broke into a run, not even trying to be silent, and heard him do the same. As his footsteps clattered down the stairway and across the entry hall, I gave up hope of reaching that back bathroom. I dashed down the little hallway to the nearby guest bathroom, flung myself inside, slammed the door behind me, and locked it. I leaned against the wall for support and waited in the darkness, not daring to turn on the light. It was easier to hear each separate sound in the dark. Unfortunately, there was no window in this bathroom. No way I could escape. I could see light under the door where the sunlight reflected on the tiles. The pattern was broken as someone stepped in front of the door and stood there. What was he going to do? The light pattern shifted as he stepped away from the door. I let out a long swoosh of air, suddenly aware that I hadn't been breathing. I knew what I'd do in his place. I'd go to the kitchen and get a small screwdriver or a skewer, something long and thin, to put inside the hole in the center of the doorknob and jiggle the tumbler so the lock would open. I'd used that safety hole more than once when I was babysitting little children who could lock bathroom doors but couldn't open them. If that was what he had in mind, then my only chance was to get out of here before he came back. My hand was so slippery with sweat that it slipped against the knob. I hesitated, too fearful to move. What if he was just outside the door, waiting? I thought of Dinky, silently poised to pounce on the birds that flew to our front lawn. Was the person on the other side of the door also waiting, crouched and ready to spring if I should open this door? The sound of a footstep, and he was back. Under the door, the light was once more broken by the shadow from his shoes. I pressed back against the wall, well aware that I had nothing with which to defend myself. I thought I heard the doorknob move, but I heard something else. A police siren, and it was coming closer. There was a hiss as whoever was outside the door took a sharp breath. He had to have heard the siren. His footsteps left the hallway, moving silently but quickly. The siren was shrill as the police car swung into our driveway. Heedlessly, I threw open the bathroom door and ran into the entry hall just as an officer knocked loudly on the front door. Unable to stop shaking or to keep my teeth from chattering, I led the two police officers into the house and tried to explain what had happened. It was hard to tell them apart. They were both of medium height with medium brown hair and probably in their mid-30s. They told me their names, but I was so scared I couldn't remember them. One searched upstairs, one down. They examined the front and back doors and some of the downstairs windows.
"There's no sign of an intruder in the house and no sign of forced entry," one of them said. "Have you found anything missing?"
Embarrassed because I hadn't thought to look, I took a quick tour of the house. Everything seemed to be in place. Mom's shoulder bag was lying on her bed, and the wallet, with money inside, was in place. I checked Mom's jewelry box. She didn't have much of the real stuff, just her watch and a couple of rings. But they hadn't been touched. Upstairs was the same. Tiny dust motes drifted through the bands of sunlight that spilled from my window onto the carpet. Dinky, who had strolled in when I'd opened the door to the officers, paraded past me, jumped to the bed, and settled, her eyes accusing me of allowing her peace to be disturbed. "What do you know about this, Dinky?" I asked her, but her only answer was to squeeze her eyes shut slowly and pretend I wasn't there.
"Did you actually see someone in the house?"
the first officer asked me as I rejoined them downstairs.
"No, I just heard someone."
"Houses pop and creak with temperature changes. Maybe you heard the air conditioner start up."
"No, I heard footsteps. He was standing outside the bathroom door."
"Did he try to open the door?"
I don't know."
"Did you see the doorknob move?"
"Not exactly. I didn't turn on the light."
They gave each other a patient look, and I felt my cheeks burn as my face reddened. I didn't imagine it. Someone was here. One of the officers gave me his business card and said,
"If you have any more trouble, just call us."
"You don't believe me."
The other wiped the sweat from his forehead with the back of one hand and replaced his hat.
"No sign of forced entry," he said, "and nothing missing so far as you can tell. If it were someone burglarizing the house, he probably would have taken your mother's watch and rings. He'd definitely have taken the cash, and maybe the credit cards."
"I guess," I answered. But another thought hit me. Unless he didn't come here to steal anything. The officer with his hand on the doorknob paused and turned to look at me.
"Have you had any strange phone calls? Anyone following you? Any reason to think you might be a target?"
"No."
The other officer nodded toward the card in my hand. It was obvious he was getting impatient.
"Call us if you need us," he said.
"Thank you," I mumbled as they left the house. I knew they didn't believe me.
Why was someone in this house? I asked aloud. Why? 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 The next thought startled me. Who?
I didn't have the answer.
Chapter 10. Mom and the police car passed each other as she drove into our street. I waited outside while she parked the car. I knew there'd be questions.
It looked to me as though that police car came out of our driveway, Mom said before I had a chance to tell her a thing.
Her suit was almost dry under the shirt she was wearing as a cover-up, and her towel was draped around her neck.
It did, I said. I called the police.
Mom stopped in mid-step and stared at me.
Why? What happened?
Come on inside. I'll tell you all about it. She followed me into the house and back to the kitchen, asking,
Was someone trying to break in?
A sudden thought struck her, and she grabbed my shoulders, searching my face.
Sarah, you're all right, aren't you?
Mom, I had to shout to get her to pay attention.
Stop asking so many questions. Just listen to me. Tell me first about you, she demanded.
I'm fine. No problems.
Then what?
Sit down, Mom, and give me a chance. I practically pushed her into the nearest kitchen chair and sat beside her. When I came home, I went straight to the kitchen for a drink of water. While I was in the kitchen, I thought I heard someone moving around upstairs, so I called the police.
Did they catch him? Oh, my gosh!
Her right hand clasped her left wrist.
My watch! It was right there on the nightstand! And my handbag! The credit cards!
She was half out of her chair. Whoever it was didn't take anything, I assured her. She looked puzzled and sat down again.
Nothing? Who was it? Did you see him?
No. I took a deep breath that ended in a sigh.
Mom, I know I heard someone run down the stairs. I locked myself in the guest bathroom, so I didn't see him, but I heard him.
Why didn't you try to get away from him by running out the back door? Mom asked.
That would have been quicker and safer.
Because the deadbolt was locked and the key wasn't in the door. We both looked at the door at the same time.
There it is, Mom said. On the floor, right under the lock.
It wasn't there then. I would have seen it. That's why I ran to the bathroom. I heard him run down the stairs. He came down the hall toward the bathroom. I could even see his shadow when he stood in front of the door.
Mom's eyes were wide, and her mouth opened.
But, please don't interrupt. Let me tell you, I don't know if he was going to try to unlock the bathroom door or not. When he heard the police siren, he left.
The police must have seen him.
They didn't. They searched upstairs and downstairs and didn't find any sign of forced entry. And nothing was missing.
Bitterly, I added, They practically said they thought I imagined the whole thing.
Mom looked troubled. She reached over and took my hand.
Is there any chance that you could have, Sarah? The key is there.
No,
I insisted. Her glance was searching.
Sarah, you've never explained what frightened you when you first set foot in this house. Could what happened here today be tied in with that?
She took a deep breath, and I could see the fear in her eyes.
Does this all have anything to do with that spirit you once imagined was with you?
No.
Well, then, Mom said brightly, as though she were doing her best to support me. I'll get out of this bathing suit, and we'll take another look around.
In spite of her words, I could see the doubt in her eyes, and it hurt. In less than 5 minutes, she returned, her hair still damp and uncombed.
"I'll take the downstairs, you take the upstairs," she said, and disappeared into the dining room, where I knew she'd count the silver. I automatically went to my own room first. Nothing had been disturbed, including a handful of change I'd left on top of the chest. One by one, I repeated the opening and checking of each drawer, starting at the top. Nothing had been touched.
but as I tried to close the bottom drawer, it seemed to stick, resisting my efforts. It was as though someone were tugging it out as I was trying to push it in. I suddenly stopped, and the drawer wobbled, jumping back an inch.
"Why are you doing..."
I didn't finish the question because I suddenly knew the answer. I dropped to my knees and shoved both hands into the folded clothes, my fingers frantically groping for Rosa's packet. It was no longer in the drawer. It was gone. So angry that tears burned my eyes, I sat back on my heels. Whoever was in this house had stolen it. Who would do such a thing? My first thought was Tony, but I didn't know why it would have been Tony. No, it couldn't have been. He had even warned me to hide the packet. Dee Dee knew about it. She'd seen Rose's things, even read the letter. But there was no way she could have left her lifeguard job to break into our house. But Dee Dee couldn't keep a secret. Tony had been concerned about this, and now I was too. I knew that she'd told Lupita about Rose's things, and I bet she told Eric. Could Eric have been the thief? I closed the drawer, which offered no resistance now, and walked into the short hallway that led to both bedrooms. As I stood there, trying to sort out my thoughts, I stared ahead into the spare bedroom, watching a hot breeze ruffle the leaves of the tree outside the window. The curtain was caught in the sash. My skin prickled as I realized what I was seeing. No one had opened this window, not with the air conditioning on. Then how did the curtain get caught? I rushed to the window and opened it, pulling the curtain aside. Below the window was a short ledge, and nearly touching the ledge was a long, thick branch of the tree that was centered in the narrow courtyard garden between this part of the front of the house and the garage. I closed the window and tried to lock it, but the lock on top of the sash was loose and spun around. The metal piece into which it would have fastened was not on the sash. The minute Dad came home, I'd ask him to repair the lock. Until then, frantically, I looked around the room, trying to find something to wedge against the lower sash so the window wouldn't open, but I didn't see anything that would hold it. My thoughts ran into and over each other so rapidly it was hard to keep up. This had been Adam's room. His father must have known the lock was broken. Maybe Adam had broken it on purpose. For how many years had Adam sneaked in and out of this window? Mr. Holt lied to me about the years in which Rosa had worked for them. Had he told Adam what I'd found? Had Adam come back to steal the packet? Adam, the murderer, had he been the one I'd heard in the house? But Eric had said that Adam went to California to live with his mother. If it wasn't Adam, it had to be Eric. I ran toward the telephone in my room, sprawling across the bed. I flipped through the phone book with numb fingers until I found Eric's number, then